Hello from Delinea, and welcome to the show. If you've been enjoying the 401 Access Denied podcast, then make sure to like, follow, and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. We'd love to hear from you. Join the discussion by leaving us a comment or a review on your platform of choice, or by emailing us at podcast@delinea.com. From all of us at Delinea, thank you, and enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the 401 Access Denied podcast. I'm the host of the show, Joe Carson, Chief Security Scientist and Advisory Sysadmin at Delinea, an organization who really helps protect identities and authentication authorization for many organizations around the world. And today I'm joined by a returning guest who's been on the episode quite a few times before. So welcome back to the episode. Welcome, Tony. Do you want to give the audience just a reminder who you are, what you do, and any interesting things about yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Hello, everybody. Nice to be back. My name is Tony. I work for Delinea. I've been in the security industry for many, many years, almost 30, if not more than 30. I kind of lost count over the decades. But privileged access management, identity security, that's kind of my life. Good and bad, sad, but it's really exciting. I mean, we just came back from the RSA conference, and Verizon has just given us their view on the last year in security. So we're all pumped up, ready to look at those things and talk about them and help our customers understand how they can mitigate risks associated with identity. So it's a really exciting time for me. Within Delinea, I'm kind of I wear two hats. I'm in product marketing, so I work on the technical side of product marketing, and on events like this, I'm kind of a security evangelist. So it's a really lovely balance for me in my job. I get lots of exciting things to do, such as this podcast.
Fantastic.
So back to you, Joe.
And where's your original, where's the accent from? Just to remind the audience.
Oh, the accent. Well, it's a little muddy. So I live in the US. I live in California, and it's getting rather hot now. I'm glad it's early in the morning. The heat hasn't quite hit me. But I live in California. I've been in the US since 1989, but I was born and bred in Wales. In fact, I was born in a town called Wrexham, which if anybody in the podcast that follows soccer, you'll be familiar with Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney and their acquisition of the Wrexham Football Club. So Hollywood has arrived in my hometown, which is a very bizarre concept. It's really strange to watch that kind of stuff. But yeah, born and bred in Wales, educated in the UK, went to Keele University. And since 89, I've been in this country. I've been in the US.
Fantastic. Excellent. And moving into today's topic, of course, it's the Verizon Data Breach Investigations Report, which has come out. Mm-hmm. Which is always, it's one of those reports in where we kind of give ourselves a bit of a scorecard into how we've been doing in the past year. Have we been getting better? Have we been improving our defensive? What techniques are the attackers using? What's been successful? So it's always that one of those, you know, long-awaited reports. And then we try to analyze and understand the results. So, and it's basically, and I mean, it's amazing if I look back at, you know, it's 17th year now. So this is impressive long run of reports.
And it is.
So it really allows you to go back in the data, the trends, and compare mm-hmm. Over year. This report covered 94 countries globally, 30,000 plus incidents, and then also over 10,000 data breaches. So quite a lot of interesting kind of data that's in there. So for Tony, what was some of your key takeaways? What was the thing that really surfaced to the highlight that you were kind of really, you know, kind of surprised you or maybe even didn't surprise you? What did you take away from it?
Yeah, as you said, I mean, we all look forward to this thing coming out. And if we are surprised, it's like, well, we shouldn't be because we're experts in this field. But I think overall, you know, I saw several continuing trends from the past year, you know, so I think that so Verizon refers to, they analyze what they call the ways in, the methods used to, you know, that threat actors use to gain initial access. And and of those ways in, the trends were very, very similar to last year. So that was a little bit surprising. There were a couple of kind of, a couple of blips that caught my eye. Mm-hmm. There was an uptick in insider threats. It was fairly significant. It's like 35% from 20%. That caught my eye. And there was also a few references to recommendations like the use of MFA and the non-use of VPNs. And also there was supply chain attack references mm-hmm. that influenced almost 10% of breaches. So these are areas that we need to keep an eye on. And certainly when it comes to solutions to prevent those types of threats, you know, Delinea, we have to look at that. We have to focus on those things that are mm-hmm. that are trending, that continue to trend, but also those slight jumps in percentages. We need to focus on those.
Absolutely. So one of the things I kind of you covered a lot of those great areas. One thing I kind of really honed into was that the a number of credential compromise continues
right.
to be the top right. way in. Right. You know, it's followed. Credential compromise was leading. I think it was probably, you know, more than two times of what the next method, which was phishing, and then followed not far behind by exploits and vulnerabilities. And vulnerabilities did significantly increase because we did see a significant amount of vulnerabilities in 0 days last year that, of course, you know, attackers jumped on. But if you look at, you know, credentials, one thing, and if you look at not just at last year's report, but you go back into the last 10 years, it shows that actually more than 30% of the basically methods of getting access over the last 10 years has been credentials. What's your thoughts around that? What do you think that continues to be the method?
Well, it does. It's no shock to me because, I mean, at the end of the day, if you've got infrastructure, if you've got systems and the way into those systems are using IDs and passwords or, you know, it may be federated, but at the end of the day, it's some kind of credential mm-hmm. and that credential ties permissions to an account. And so that is the way that you're going to get access to stuff. And it's also compromising more privileged credentials is mm-hmm. the natural way that you're going to elevate those permissions to gain access to the things that a normal user wouldn't have access to. So credential theft, it could be in the form of insider theft or insider elevation as well as the external threat. Mm-hmm. That's going to be their primary target. That's the way that they're going to gain access to the most systems and services and resources mm-hmm. within your infrastructure. And of course, with the cloud, I mean, those resources they've just ballooned over the last 5 years. So even more opportunity, credentials haven't gone away. Mm-hmm. They're still there. We still use passwords a lot. You know, the promise of pass keys taking over and making our lives a lot more secure. It's still something I believe in. I think it still has a lot of potential, but it's not there, right? We're still using passwords today. So credential theft has always been and probably will be for the foreseeable future the main vector of attack in the playbook of threat actors.
Absolutely, because it works, and it works successfully it all the time.
Well, and that human element, which is phishing people, you know, in their psychology, it's like, you know, that's something that can be leveraged.
Yeah, absolutely.
And AI contributes to that as well. So we'll get to that.
It does indeed, especially when it comes to using phishing campaigns and business email compromise. Those are the areas that I see, you know, a lot of kind of really more sophisticated types of attacks. Thinking about even when you're referring to one thing that I took away as well is that organizations, they tend to always still have flat networks, and especially more in cloud environments. And what that tends to do is that if attackers are able to use that initial access of stolen credentials to get in, what you tend to have is this mixture between low-risk accounts and high-risk accounts on the same flat network. Mm-hmm. And attackers are really good at using those low-risk accounts to do privilege escalation.
Right.
They know those paths. They got the playbooks. You go to the MITRE ATT&CK framework, and you can look at all of the different methods that they can move from low-risk accounts to highly privileged accounts. And those techniques they use over and over again. So I think it's really important, you know, it's important to make sure that not only you're protecting those accounts from that initial access, with adding
that is MFA a very good point.
And other security controls in place, but at the same time, the segmentation is critical.
No, that is a very good point. I mean, you know, for years, for example, Microsoft has published their architecture for Microsoft networks, and it's a tiered architecture. And I don't think, you know, well, I can't say this for sure, but I'm sure many people don't take a lot of attention to that tiering mm-hmm. because the tiering also if it was implemented properly, it would achieve what you're talking about, which would be the segregation of different levels of privileges and credentials into tiers, where the entry, the ingress and the egress from those tiers is very well defined and it's very well controlled. And that way, I mean, there's still going to be the problem of escalation, but it would make that job a lot more difficult for the threat actors if those boundaries were more properly defined and controlled and protected.
Absolutely. And that's why a lot of organizations move to things like vaulting in order to do that segregation between accounts. And also making sure you're laying security controls that, you know, once you're in the door, the path to those privileged accounts is a lot more difficult and challenging with the basic security controls and auditability in place.
I mean, for years, we've proclaimed the idea of least privilege. And, you know, you may like the term or not, just like zero trust has its, you know, advocates and its detractors. But as a concept, it is fundamental. It's fundamental to zero trust. It's fundamental to a lot of other best practices. But in terms of least privilege, in an absolutely perfect world, you would eliminate all of those privileged accounts that these attackers are going after, but you can't. So you've got to put them in a vault. You've got to put them in a place where you can protect and govern their access, where you can do just-in-time access, so you can get approval for using those in a legitimate fashion as part of a legitimate job function. If you're an administrator that just got a help desk ticket telling you to go and fix a web server problem on a particular device, then you've got to have those controls in place.
Absolutely. Getting to least standing privileges, or sometimes I refer to zero persistent privilege. So I have a question.
I'll steal
one
that.
Of things is, it's one of my favorite. I mean, I come from a virtualization background. It was always about getting to, you know, non-persistent environments. And that's where I kind of always thought about, you know, zero persistent privilege. And also getting to zero friction as well. When you think about zero trust, I will say that you have to make sure that it's usable as well. So you have to have a zero friction approach.
Yeah,
also.
That's an interesting point, because I mean, if you talk about just in time, then you're talking about a workflow where you're kicking in, you're doing a self-service request. There's a workflow, it goes to an approver, it comes back, it gets provisioned. There's going to be some inherent delay in that process, but I think it's absolutely necessary. And you know, I think that's just the nature of the beast. But it's interesting, you notice, you know, you mentioned about the virtualization, because obviously in the cloud, we're faced with that a lot, right? Yep. There's a lot of ephemeral servers going up and down, spinning up and down, and those credentials are going up and down with it. So that's an obvious area.
And that's where you're getting into temporary credentials, and then getting into things like, well, you've got also patching faster, which also, that's what virtualization also allows you to get to, getting to micro-segmentation. So I've got a question for you. Into one of the things that was really interesting as well was the state of ransomware within the report itself. And we recently did our own ransomware research, which also showed where the acceleration of data exfiltration. And this report, Verizon Data Breach Investigation Report, also showed the rise of ransomware, but also the rise of data exfiltration, notably, you know, where it's getting to extortionware. What was your thoughts around it?
Yeah, I mean, I think they use the term ramstortion, which I kind of like. It sounds like a German heavy metal band or something. But ramstortion is the fun term that they're using. But yeah, I think the number. So I've got a few notes here, but I think the number for ransomware and so on was around 23%, which was just slightly lower than stolen credentials. But if you do combine that with, you know, the stealing the data for extortion as well, then that number jumps to like 32%. And, you know, it was the top breach pattern in most sectors, you know, scientific, financial, heavy, technical services, scientific, et cetera. And yeah, in terms of ransomware, it's the gift that keeps on giving, isn't it? I mean, I think that the ranks are, there's fluidity. I mean, there was, you know, the feds came down on some of the groups, and that's kind of leaving a bit of a void, but others are climbing into that void. So it's not going away. And, you know, I guess ransomware groups, they're continuing to be innovative. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the MOVEit incident, the zero-day vulnerability. They're stealing, you know, data versus deploying ransomware. So, so yeah, I think we're going to see more of that. It's interesting that one of the things that Verizon mentioned about vulnerabilities and zero days like MOVEit is they actually recommended that organizations try and distinguish between human adversarial behavior versus bots, mm-hmm. because generally speaking, when you discover something like MoveIt, they're going to automate that. They're going to create bots that will automate the process of using that tool. But initially, there seems to be a trend, especially in the bigger groups, of doing it manually just to try and discover if there are zero-day paths through an organization. So the ability to spot manual activity by an adversary that mm-hmm. could be kind of like a precursor or a hint that there may be a zero-day attack on the way if they happen to find one, they recommended that you try and distinguish between the two, which is kind of an interesting thing.
Absolutely. But, it makes it kind of from a weaponized perspective, because it also, when you look at ransomware gangs, they're very much organized crime. You've got mm-hmm. different elements. You've got those who specialize sure. in initial access brokers. You've got those yeah. who specialize in creating the ransomware itself. You've got the money launderers. You've got the right. hands-on keyboard. You've got the service desk. It's just right. basically supply chain.
I mean, they are businesses, aren't they? They've got HR and recruiters.
Yeah, absolutely. They're even on looking for new hires and offering salaries. And yeah. it's always interesting yeah. to see that ecosystem evolving.
I mean, we laugh, but it is a business for sure.
Absolutely. And one of the things I recently went to watch Mikko's Hipnin's recent talk, which was fantastic, and he referred to it as he's saying that even these ransomware gangs are getting into branding, marketing, mm. where they have logos, and they've got slogans.
That's,
and it's interesting
t-shirts.
T-shirts as well. They want to be known for right. what they do. They want people to know that. Oh my, the scare of that, oh, you get hit by ransomware. And then the second right. part of it is, and we were hit by this guy. And then yeah. it's like the second shock. So that's kind of where, but one of the things is, I think the indications from the report as well shows me that we are getting better. Even though ransomware is on the rise, but with extortion being the acceleration, it tells me that we're getting much better at data backups, data mm. resiliency. It means organizations are, they have a choice of going back to the data that they've got. They've got a ransomware resilient backup.
I also, throughout the year, I mean, I've read a lot about the fact that, they've been trying to con the public, con their victims. In other words, they say that here's some encrypted data, you've been done. But several of maybe the mid and smaller size groups, they don't necessarily have all of the tools to do that kind of en masse encryption. So they're conning their victims into thinking that they are, hoping that they'll get a ransom out of it. And I think that several organizations now are pushing back and saying, no, mm-hmm. we're going to beef up our ability to back up and restore, and we're not necessarily going to go down that path. Mm-hmm. But also in the Verizon report, I mean, they have some stats on the potential average cost. I also read some FBI stats recently that put kind of the mm-hmm. median ransom demand at something like 0.05% of victim revenue, which doesn't sound much, right? So that would be like, $4,000 for a $10 million mm-hmm. company. But when it comes to the big game hunting, the mm-hmm. larger crews, then that percentage drove up to about 25% of revenue for the top 10% of the cases. So, mm-hmm. that would be $25 million for a $100 million company. So that's a big difference. Right. Absolutely. And that's just ransom, right? It doesn't take into account things like reputational damage and the cost to restore, et cetera, et cetera.
Loss of customers in the future,
Exactly. Yeah.
All of the kind of legal side of things in the background.
Right.
So one of the interesting things as well was that around that, when you think about when the attackers are doing data exfiltration and they're taking the data out, that's right. They know that, okay, they've got a backup. I can't destroy the backup. So I'm going to just do data exfiltration. What they're really good at is analyzing that data and understanding about the financial stability of the organization, what's been going on in the organization, who's the right people. And they analyze that. So they actually have a really good idea of what type of ransom that organization has the capability of paying without damaging the business. So they're really getting very creative and very good at understanding from a financial perspective. But I think this is where we see the joining of two criminal parts of the industry is that one thing that ransomware gangs were never really good at was money laundering. And that's what organized criminals were good at was money laundering. And you're seeing those two ecosystems of organized crime and mm-hmm. ransomware digital, criminals converging and sharing knowledge and experience in order to really get that end-to-end service.
But again, as we discussed earlier, it comes down to skills for hire, right? They're hiring people Absolutely. With those skills to fill the gaps that they that they have. But it's interesting. When you exfiltrate data, you could have terabytes of data. So we'll come to it, but AI is going to contribute into their ability to sift through that quickly and maybe analyze it and pull out, you know, relevant information.
Absolutely. And I guess one of the other key takeaways was that, you know, if you look at the different types of motivations, right up there at the top, you know, financial motivation.
Financial. Yeah.
It's financial, purely financial.
Right.
Even it was like 7% was espionage, which is the nation state, which is very, very small if you look at the entire number of all of the number of incidents and data breaches. So
we're well, the other with, thing that
the financial portion here.
The thing that might contribute to that is supply chains, because if you're let's say a tech provider or a service provider and you've got lots of downstream customers, then somebody on the inside would have much more access to stuff outside of its own initial, organizational sphere of control or sphere of information. They could spread downstream to other organizations that are affiliated down that supply chain. And, consequently, the opportunity is much bigger. So, you know, they could be subject to more targeted blackmail attacks or whatever. So there could be collusion involved in those things. And that would also be a financially motivated set of attacks.
Absolutely. One of the things that you touched on just a little bit, let's dive into that right now, is the AI piece. And one of the big takeaways that one from the Ryzen DBIR was that criminals are not using AI because the basic attacks still work. they don't need to go and develop and invest heavily into these massive GPUs to do lots of these, you know, really fancy AI capabilities. They're finding compromised credentials still works. They're finding that phishing campaign still works. They're finding that vulnerabilities are still going to happen, and those will lead into access. They're going to find vulnerabilities in web applications. So one of the things that it looked like is that while Gen AI and all of the things we're seeing with artificial intelligence seems to be, you know, focused heavily on the defense side today, I have seen some uses in, for example, let's say creating better phishing campaigns for things like translations.
I've seen it, yes.
Being more creative in the types of social engineering capabilities. But I would tend to agree, as I haven't seen it being used in, like, you know, augmenting the ransomware variant to bypass the defenses in real time. I haven't seen it get to those points where it's a battle of algorithms and battle of AIs.
No, me neither.
I would tend to agree with the analysis of the report when it comes to attackers using AI.
I mean, I think this time next year when we're at RSA 2025, we'll probably see a lot more of it. Although every session I attended in 2023 had an AI element to it. But I think that's just the case that, you know, as a provider, as a product vendor, you can't be seen not to use the term AI, whether you're actually incorporating it or not. But to your point, the only kind of areas that I've seen AI being used is with those translations of let's say, you know, business email compromise attacks, the emails reading back. I've also seen reference to it being used to do research on an executive. So they're going to target somebody pretending to be an executive, and they use AI to research that executive and to cull information, let's say that, you know, the executive's daughter may be in college right now or on a vacation or something, and they incorporate that into there. So the AI can be used to help
the recalling side, reconnaissance. Really get the blueprint of the organization. Because this is one of the things I used to do in the past when I was penetration testing, was creating those blueprints about who's the prime target. And absolutely, if you feed the public information from an organization into generative AI, it would simulate and create that for you.
Yeah, so I think we will see more of it. I did read a couple of weeks ago about a situation where, you know, security controls are being offered and used to combat BEC, like things like using a verbal authentication request from C-suite execs, but they're being circumvented using AI to clone executive voices. So, you know, it's kind of creeping in there.
It is. I think most of the things we're seeing it, though, is more in...
It's very lightweight.
Deepfakes would be probably the, you know, mostly for celebrity side of things or cloning or, you know, fake advertisements. That's where the majority of that criminal activities has been. Where I've seen it, you know, being based in Estonia, one of the things is that the Estonian language is very complex. So that has for many years been a barrier for criminals, to do phishing and business email compromising and social engineering without having local expertise or local proper translators. But that's what, you know, ChatGPT and generative AI has been able to, they've removed that barrier. So the Estonian language is no longer a barrier to protect here. So it means you have to be more been able to detect those types of scams.
Yeah, and it's an interesting tie-in that the Innovation Sandbox at RSA this year, the company that won it was a company that has software to recognize deepfakes because of exactly this potential scenario. So, I mean, they're making a business out of it, so we must assume that there is a impending demand for that kind of security. So, interesting.
Absolutely. From the report itself and analyzing all of those details, you know, the credentials, the vulnerability side of things, the exploits, getting into ransomware being on the rise with a focus on extortion, and the AI pieces. What's your recommendation? What should organizations take away from the report? And what recommendations would you have in order to, you know, what types of security controls should they be prioritizing based on the lessons they've learned from this?
Well, I'm jaded. I've obviously, you know, I'm in a space where we do help with that, but I don't think it takes a lot of I don't think it takes much reasoning to follow the puck. I mean, we're still in a situation where IT and IT security has limited budgets, so they've got to focus on where they spend that. And given the fact that credential theft and credential abuse is still the top way in that attackers are exploiting, with ransomware and plus ransomware plus extortion being slightly further behind, then for me, it's if you don't have a vault, get a vault. That would be the number one. But because these, especially the ransomware attacks, are very layered. I mean, the typical attack chain, the layers the methodology that they use in order to gain initial foothold, to gain access, to elevate privilege, to move laterally. You've got to spread those controls, throughout your infrastructure. So that means locking down workstations, having workstation protection, so that you can do things like simple blocking and tackling, but it requires technology to make it happen. And that is removing, you know, just basic users from things like the local administrator group, making sure that they have least privilege, and then extending that to servers where you can do the same thing to prevent lateral movement, which is a very, very common adversarial tactic. So you want to prevent that lateral movement. But if they do get, and obviously to protect the server from being attacked in the first place, but if they do get a foothold, you want to try and prevent that, reduce that blast radius, contain them, in other words. Don't, you know, put hurdles in their path to prevent them from going to the next step in their playbook. So those hurdles are all important. And now the focus is on making sure that you can do all of these kinds of things across your entire identity fabric. So that identity fabric, if you're looking at credential protection, that includes your identity providers, whether it's Entra ID, whether it's Ping, whether it's Okta, whether it's on-prem Active Directory. You've got to have visibility into those IDPs, as well as your systems, your workstations, your servers, whether they're on-prem or in the cloud. And that visibility, especially if you have an analytics capability to analyze all of that, you can understand the access pathways across your entire identity fabric. And with an understanding of those pathways, you can better identify risk at the various points within your infrastructure that's identity specific. So my recommendation would be to visit or revisit the the tools that enable you to have that visibility to detect these types of anomalous activities that go on, whether it's the human or the bot, as we discussed earlier, and then to be able to very, very quickly react to those to try and shut it down or remediate it if it's actually something in progress.
Absolutely. So kind of from that, you know, since credentials are still the top initial access factor, getting control of that. And if I summarize, you know, into that is, you know, from the authentication side of things, is really get good at authenticating your users. So, you know, going and validating, you know, Tony, that you really are Tony, And then the next side of that is the authorization side, is really, okay, what can Tony do in the environment?
Exactly.
Getting to that, you know, zero persistent privilege or least standing privileges so that it's elevation on demand. And using also that segregation of duties. So we're thinking about not just MFA at the front door, but also MFA at different intersections within the organization.
Right.
And then with that is the entitlement side of things, where you're thinking about, okay, now that I know who Tony is and I can kind of make sure that he's only doing the things he's entitled to do, is what has he done in the environment? So getting that visibility and the entitlements is the audit trail into where have you been? What have you changed?
Right.
And does that align with things like regulatory side of things as well? Because there's always compliance piece in as well.
And of course, you've got to wrap something like an IGA function around that. So having routine, regular identity recertification and permission recertification projects so that you can constantly adjust. You know, does Tony need the same rights next quarter as he had this quarter? Has his role changed? Has his function changed? So that way you're constantly adjusting the permissions and the access that's appropriate to the job function over time.
So absolutely, getting to dynamic or adaptive entitlement. So it's not manually done from day one and never revisited, which many organizations unfortunately do. So,
there's a lot of stale.
Absolutely, it's just that you continually inherit privileges and permissions and entitlements over the time, rather than having it where it's context based or dynamic based. So if I'm going to give a summary, I mean, the 2024 Verizon DBIR, it really underscores that credentials compromise remains the formidable challenge for many organizations. And cyber criminals are kind of refining their tactics. They're using them. They're still using the same things that work. But we have to be vigilant that they're going to continue evolving those and improving them over time. And it's really important to make sure that strong authentication and authorization and educating employees, learning about, you know, what the report tells us, continually monitoring for threats.
Right.
And really kind of working together as a community and sharing the knowledge, you know, to make the world a safer place.
Well, the community is interesting because, you know, the certainly in the US, the FBI and the various three-letter agencies are way more out there now, willing to help and coordinate and collaborate on issues of security than they ever were before. Their presence, I keep mentioning RSA, but their presence at RSA, they were everywhere. You're not on your own anymore if you do get hacked. There are lots of resources there to help you out. But Verizon's my read of the DBIR is that they summarized the takeaways being continued need for security awareness. There always will be because of that human element. So continual education. MFA, which, as you mentioned, is a critical identity assurance control that can really, you know, sort of detect bots and prevent them from moving further. Secure coding, which we didn't touch, but I think that's important as well. And there's a lot of emphasis on that. And insider threat monitoring. So that's part of that, you know, being able to detect, monitor, analyze, have the visibility and monitor activity for potential anomalous activity. And that's where AI can actually help with that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think what kind of reminds me is two things it wasn't heavily focused on in the report this year, which was around API security and cloud security. It was in there, but not heavily focused. Organizations are in the hybrid world where they've got
interesting.
So, Tony, it's been awesome having you on the show, as always.
Thank you.
Your knowledge and insights of the report is very valuable for the listeners and those out there. Any final thoughts you would like to leave the audience with before we close the episode for tonight?
Be safe out there. there's no silver bullet. We all know that. So follow the puck. And again, as I said, with your limited budget, your limited time, your limited resources, try and focus on the high bar. Mm-hmm. I would focus on credential protection for sure. That would be my
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's been the 31% of the last 10 years of being credential compromised and stolen credentials.
It's a big chunk.
Definitely, we need to prioritize the thing that criminals are being successful at. Tony, it's been awesome having you on. Many thanks as always.
Thank you.
It's been chatting with you. For the audience out there, every 2 weeks, tune in to the 401 Access Denied podcast. We're here to bring you thought leaders, exciting topics, trends, and really leave you with the knowledge in order to take back to your organizations and hopefully make your organization, your family, your community, your society, and the world a safer place online. Take care. Thank you, and stay safe.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This podcast is brought to you by Delinea, the number one privileged access management solution for enterprises with complex hybrid IT environments. You can get our free ebook, Privileged Access Management for Dummies, by visiting us at delinea.com/PAM for Dummies. That's delinea.com/PAM4Dummies. From all of us at Delinea, thanks for listening.